swing and a drive. Right field and deep. Back goes Aquino. It's got a chance. Gone. Get out the tape measure. Long gone.
Fly the W!
Cubs fans, it's time to fly the W with Dustin Rhodes and Paul Crawley Jean.
You are listening to the Fly the W670 podcast. It is season 3, episode 77, and the 2024 Cubs officially have been eliminated. Oh, Crawley, don't forget to listen, download, review, and most importantly, subscribe to the podcast. Follow on all the socials, Fly W670 on Twitter, Instagram. Of course, we're on Facebook, and you can email us, flythew670@gmail.com. Well, Crawley, for the most part, the on-the-field play went halfway well for the Cubs, but kind of the story since the last time you and I got together was something Craig Counsell had said before a game against the Nationals.
Yeah, you know, Craig Counsell, we talked about this the other day where he was critical of his team the other day, and I think that, you know, we're starting to see Craig kind of assert himself a little bit here. He's been here for a year. He's had a lay of the land. So I think, you know, it was obviously the Brewers clinched again. So he was asked about it and he, before the series, and he was pretty honest. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I think the message sent really is that, look, there's a big gap. I mean, they're ahead of us by a lot. And it's a talented team on and off the field. It's a talented team. But there's a big gap, and we got room to make up. There's no question about it. And so that makes it, frankly, that makes it daunting. They've been good, man. I mean, for the division. I mean, I'd say that about the other teams too, right? You know, they've created a gap the last 2 years in the division. So yeah, we got room to go, man. Like we got work to do for sure.
I mean, a big gap is what he's saying. Big gap. I listen to that and I say to myself,
do you agree with that? Do you agree that the gap is as big as he, I mean, it's scary hearing him say that, right?
Well, he
knows, you know, he knows better than we do.
Right. He's seen behind the scenes of both. He's seen under the hood of both cars. Right. And he's saying that there's a lot of work to do. And I go back to our friend, Bob Nightingale, and some of the comments he said about friction in the front office. And I don't know, we were kind of debating this, but I wonder how happy Craig is with the hand he was dealt. And maybe he's looking at this from eyes different than what we've been looking at it and what others in the Cubs organization have been looking at it and just saying, look, there is a talent gap between the Cubs and the Brewers. He also added this, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to get better, man. Like the team we're chasing is 10 games ahead of us. You got to get better. And then we should try to be building 90-win teams here. I mean, you know, like that's like what you have to do to, you know, that's a playoff standard. I mean, that's what you got to get to be safely in the playoffs, right? And safely in the tournament. So from that perspective, you know, we got a ways to go.
Ways to go. Ways to go.
He's right. 90 wins is going to get you in 9 times out of 10 with this expanded postseason. So that's what you're going with. But when you're talking about a 10 game gap between the first and the second place teams, that's huge. That is absolutely crazy. And you know, even we can talk about blown saves and all of this. I mean, it's they were still light years better than the Cubs. And we were thinking, okay, the Brewers lost Corbin Burns and they lost Craig Counsell and Devin Williams was injured for the first half. And these guys are going to be nothing. And then they literally blew by the Cubs. It was never close. And Craig also said something about Milwaukee kind of wins the winnable moments, which I thought was interesting. You know, when it comes down to it, when it's on the line, the Brewers somehow get it done and the Cubs don't. And then the stat that you take a look at more than anything that we've talked about all year is runners in scoring position. You don't have to have the best average in baseball, the best slug, any of that stuff. You got to be able to hit when it counts. And I think that is the one thing that absolutely killed the Cubs this year. They don't win the winning moments. And I thought that Craig Counsell's observations were spot on. Now, we're paying him a lot of money, the Cubs are, to make a difference in there. But I had a friend of mine, a coach that I knew, that said you can't win the Kentucky Derby with a mule, right? You could have the best trainer. You could give it the best food, whatever. You ain't got the horse. It's not going to matter. And so I'm very curious as to what this offseason brings. I think, you know, there's a lot that we're going to be able to talk about in the offseason, but there's a lot of questions I have, a lot of frustrations I have at how this was all put together. And I thought that there was key critical mistakes in the front office that need to be addressed.
Lots of things need to be addressed. And I, you know, we've talked about it before and we're going to have plenty of time, Crowley, to talk about in the future. I just don't know how much flexibility that they really have unless they're going to get really, make some interesting trades and make some really, really big decisions. But let's move forward now. Let's review what happened at Wrigley Field. We'll start out with Friday, Javier Assad, Patrick Corbin.
Yeah, this was a close one. It was the last night game at Wrigley, back and forth battle between the
Cubs. No, it was Thursday. I'm sorry. This was Thursday.
Yeah. Washington strikes first, top of the first. C.J. Abrams leads off the game with a single, steals second, steals third, scores on an Andres Chaparro single to put Washington in front 1-0. Javier Assad strikes out the next two batters to get out of the inning, but the Cubs are able to answer back in the bottom of the first. Dansby Swanson and Cody Bellinger hit back-to-back-to-back singles. Swanson scores to tie the game at 1. Now, Washington will retake the lead in the third. C.J. Abrams again is the catalyst. He doubles to lead off the inning, advances to third on a flyout by Dylan Cruz, and scores on a James Wood double that went off the glove of Ian Happ. I know that had a high exit velocity on it, but Ian would tell you that's a play he has to make. A wild pitch by Assad moves Wood to third. Andres Chaparro grounds out to second for the second out, but Jose Tena singles, and the Nats are up 3-1. Cubs will answer right back. Ian Happ singles to lead off the inning. Swanson grounds out, but Seiya Suzuki hits a home run, number 21, and the game is tied at 3. Takes them to the bottom of the fifth. Ian Happ and Dansby Swanson single. Seiya walks to load the bases. Bellinger grounds out to first on a slow roller, but a run scores to put the Cubs ahead 4-3 with runners at second and third with one out. Isak Paredes would hit a sac fly, and now the Cubs are up 5-3. So Cubs have the lead 5-3 in the sixth, and Council decides Assad's day is done. As we always say, same type of performance from Assad, doesn't matter. Usually, you know, 5 innings, gave up 3 runs, 7 hits, 1 walk, 5 Ks. First out of the pen is Sean Armstrong. He gives up a single to Jose Tania, gets Keibert Ruiz to ground into a double play, but gives up a single to Juan Yepes. Darren Baker, Dusty Baker's kid, doubles to put runners at second and third with 2 outs. Now Council let Armstrong face Baker, a lefty, right? This was kind of weird. So he let Armstrong face Baker, who is a lefty, but elects to go to Drew Smyly to face Joey Gallo, another lefty-lefty matchup, right? He wanted that lefty-lefty matchup, but Drew gives up a 3-run homer to Gallo as the Nats are back in the lead 6-5. For Smyly, he's given up runs in each of his last 5 appearances. Dustin, I will not be sad when that salary comes off the books.
Yep, understandably so. There's no doubt about that. I'm with you. I'm with you 100% on that, Crowley.
Now down 6-5 in the bottom of the seventh, Ian Happ hits a leadoff single to get it started. Dansby Swanson singled. Seiya strikes out, but Cody Bellinger golfs one to left to tie the game. And Isak Paredes hit a ball to third. Jose Tania thought about going home, but threw it to first to get the shutter out. Dansby scores, and the Cubs retake the lead of 7-6. Of course, there's always going to be drama with the Cubs' bullpen, especially lately. Porter Hodge to close it out with 1 out. C.J. Abrams doubles. Dylan Cruz flies out to center. Abrams moves to third with 2 outs. Hodge walks James Wood. He steals second. Tying run at third. Go-ahead run at second. But Porter gets Andres Chaparro to fly out to left. Cubs win 7-6. Dustin, top of the order for the Cubs, did a great job setting the table for the middle of the order. The 1-2 combo of Happ and Swanson went 6-for-9. Which allowed the 3-5 hitters to feast on driving in some runs. Suzuki drove in 2, Bellinger drove in 3, and Paredes drove in 2 as well. They scored 7 runs on 12 hits, but were only 2-for-12 with runners in scoring position and left 6 men on base.
Nice win. That was a nice win. I mean, they could have easily caved. They kept going at it, and I thought you made a great point, Crowley, about what happened with the with the top of the order, setting the table and everything. So good job there. That moves us into now Friday, and that was game number 2. And Jameson Taillon, who had some interesting thoughts over the weekend. We're going to get to that in a little bit. But Jameson Taillon on the mound for a Friday afternoon affair at Wrigley.
Yep, Taillon takes the mound. He continues his string of dominant performance. J-Mo gave up a walk in the first, a single in the second, but ran into a little trouble in the third. Darren Baker hit a bunt single. C.J. Abrams grounded into a force out. Dylan Cruz walks. James Wood flied out. And Taillon hit Andres Chaparro with a pitch to load the bases with 2 outs. But J-Mo got Jose Tania to line out to end the threat. J-Mo would then sit down the next nine batters in a row to pick up his 11th win. The Nationals started former Cub pitcher Trevor Williams. Remember him?
I do. I do.
He was traded along with Javi Baez to get PCA. I remember Marquis did a whole bunch of stuff with his dad at the ballpark. But Williams gave up a solo home run in the first to Dansby Swanson to put the Cubs up 1-0. That was Dansby's 16th of the season. That was the only mistake Williams really made on the day. In his first start since coming off the IL, he pitched five innings, gave up one run on three hits, seven Ks with that one home run. Tyone gets taken out in the seventh. Nate Pearson comes into the game, loads the bases with two outs. His on Tyson Miller is thrown into the fire, but he gets Dylan Cruz to ground out to end the threats. Cubs are still clinging to a 1-0 lead. This is one of these turning point moments Pat Hughes talks about. Bottom of the inning, two outs. Nico Hoerner draws a walk. PCA hits an infield single. Council pinch hits for third baseman Patrick Wisdom with Mike Talkman. A wild pitch moves the runners to second and third. Talkman hits a single to drive in two runs to give the Cubs some breathing room. 3-0 lead. And when we talk about Pat, you know, he's sometimes when you make that big play in the top of the inning, you kind of bounce back in the second. You got bases loaded and Tyson Miller's able to get out of it. And then they come back and score two at the bottom of the inning. So it really kind of, you know, from a 1-0 game to a 3-0 lead, at least you got a little bit of breathing room, right?
Absolutely right.
Top of the eighth, Miller's still in the game. James Woods lead off the inning with a 3-0 lead. James Wood leads off with a solo home run. Nats on the boards. They trail the Cubs 3-1. Miller would get Andres Chaparro to pop out to first for the first out of the inning. But with Jose Tania at the bat, Miller gets Tania to pop out towards first base. Michael Bush is in front of the Reynolds wrap tarp. He jumps completely horizontal over the tarp and makes an incredible catch that would make Anthony Rizzo proud.
Yeah, what a catch. What a catch that was.
K-Bart Ruiz flied out to end the inning. But, Dustin, you know they made a rule after that Rizzo thing. You can't climb on the tarp like that.
Yeah, which is ridiculous, in my opinion.
So,
right? I mean, it's part of the field. That's a weird one.
Like you can climb on a wall, but you can't climb.
Yeah.
But either way, you know, that was a great catch. And then Porter Hodge came in the ninth and pitched a nice, easy 1-2-3 inning to pick up his seventh save. So the Cubs will win this one 3-1.
We'll take it. Moves us into Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, Cubs, you know, this is some drama before the game. Reports came out that CJ Abrams,
This is a crazy. You got to perk up your ears if you haven't heard this one, folks.
Yeah, the young Nationals all-star was out at the casino all night on Thursday till about 8 in the morning on Friday for a 1-20 game. He goes 0-3. Friend of mine, Cody Del Mundo, you know, just said, hey, a friend of mine saw CJ Abrams at the casino all night. Next thing you know, he sent packing and he was, that's basically a punishment. It wasn't done because of play. He was sent to AAA to finish the season to send a internal message, as Davey Martinez put it. I don't know, Dustin. I mean,
I guess it's a fair question. I because baseball is so many games, right? I mean, in football, you hear about bed checks during, like, when they go on, you know, but they're in and out of these cities, right? They don't spend weeks in a town sometimes, like the A's, right? The A's just spent a week in Chicago. So I just wonder, like, I mean, you know, what do you do to blow off some steam? And is there a curfew and is there bed check, or, you know, you're an adult, you know, do whatever you got to do to be ready for the game the next day. I think it's very interesting.
I think more than anything, like, let's say it was a night game, right? Let's say it was a 7 p.m. start. You could sit there yourself and say, okay, look, CJ Abrams wanted to blow off some steam. He spent the night up all night at the casino, but he got some sleep during the day and then was able to play. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, when you got a,
especially because there's so few day games, right? Most places, but here there's more. So you can be out all night and still get, you know, 6-7 hours of sleep and get to work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon for a night game, right?
Right. But when you have a day game, you know, they expect you to be there around, like, you know, 10:45, 11 o'clock. And right, so you're going to go on 2-3 hours of sleep against, you know, top tier MLB talent. I get the message they're trying to send, which is, you know, you need to care about the team. I think, like I said, it would have been different. It would have been a night game, but I understand why they did what they did. We count down the final starts of Kyle Hendricks' Cubs career. Washington got on the board first. In typical Hendricks fashion, Juan Yepes led off with an infield single. Jose Tania hit a flare to right field. Hendricks got Keibart Ruiz to pop out, but walked Joey Gallo to load the bases. Former Cub Ildemar Vargas hits a sack fly to put the Nationals up 1-0. Hendricks got Nassim Nunez to ground out to end the inning, but no hard contact really there. You know what I mean? Infield single, walk, a flare. That just seems to be what happens now with Hendricks, right?
Yep.
He was able to keep the Nationals from scoring any more runs until the sixth inning when Luis Garcia and Juan Yepes and Jose Tania all singled to load the bases with no outs. Keibart Ruiz hits a sack fly to increase the Nationals' lead 2-0. That would be it for Kyle as Keegan Thompson was the first out of the pen. Runners at the corners with one out. First batter he faces, Joey Gallo, hits a homer to put the Nationals up 5-0. For Hendricks, he went 5 1/3 inning, gave up 4 runs on 9 hits, 1 walk, and 2 Ks. Two of those runs came off the homer Keegan came up. I don't know why he came out in the sixth inning. That just kind of seemed pointless to me. You know what he gives you, and I thought he was done, but oh well. Meanwhile, Mackenzie Gore absolutely shut the Cubs down. Cubs got their first base runner in the second. Michael Busch hit by a pitch. Nico grounded into double play to end the inning. Cubs' next base runner came in the fifth. Patrick Wisdom and Michael Busch both drew walks. Nico Horner grounds into a double play, and Miguel Amaya strikes out to end the inning. Ian Happ drew a walk in the sixth with 2 outs, but Dansby grounded out. The Cubs finally get their first hit in the game. Seventh inning with 1 out. Patrick Wisdom hits one on to Waveland. So the
He crushed that ball.
Yep, no hitter ends, and the Cubs are not shut out. But for Gore, he would pitch 7 innings, give up 1 run on 1 hit with 3 walks and 9 Ks. The Cubs would get one more hit in the ninth as they would lose 5-1. Cubs offense scored only 1 run on 2 hits. And Dustin, there was just too many of these games during the season. Like, no offense to Mackenzie Gore, but seriously, 1 run on 2 hits? Come on. I mean,
yeah, that's, I mean, again, this is part of why, you know, we go back to what we talked about earlier, Crawley, the big gap that exists. That's an example of why, of how big that gap is.
Yeah. It just has happened way too many times this season. And then today, Dustin, Shota Imanaga versus Jake Irvin, 2-hour and 20-minute delay, finally got underway.
I was surprised. I mean, they must have really, you know, saw that there was a window. I'm like, this is never going to stop. I mean, I know we needed the rain around here. It's been ridiculously dry, but oh my goodness, that game.
Well, Dustin, you know, I think they don't want to lose out on the gate. I mean, you see the season ticket prices going out because you're missing 2 games next year. So they didn't want to lose the gate. So if they had a window, and I think they knew they had a window later, they were going to try to get this one in. To add some torture to Cub fans, they had the Bears game on the Jumbotron. So talk about being a glutton for punishment. No delay for the Cubs getting on the board, though. Bottom of the first, leadoff hitter Mike Tauchman hits a solo home run off the scoreboard in right field. Cubs take a 1-0 lead. Next batter, Dansby Swanson, would draw a walk, steal second, and score on Isaiah Suzuki single to make it 2-0. Cubs would add a few more in the bottom of the fourth. Michael Busch would lead off the inning with a solo home run, his 21st of the season. Isak Paredes would walk, but Patrick Wisdom would hit into a double play. But then PCA walks, and Miguel Amaya would hit a 2-run blast. Cubs lead 5-0. Shota Imanaga continues his dominant start, pitching a Dustin Rhodes-style quality start, right?
Yeah.
7 innings. Gave up 6 hits, no walks, no runs, struck
out
four.
That's a quality start.
That's a quality start. Dustin, one of my favorite moments was the third inning. He gave up a weak fly ball to James Wood that actually went for a double. But then he, with a runner on second, he gets Juan Yepes and Andres Chaparro to ground out to third. So the runner can't advance. The ball goes, you know, right to third base, right in front of the, you know, so the runner can't go. He strikes out Keibart Ruiz to end the threat. Shota gave up 2 singles in the fifth with 2 outs, but got Dylan Cruz to ground out to end that threat. Not a lot of stressful situations for Shota. He is going to get his 15th win. And Dustin, all I can say is that guy has just been way more than I think anybody expected there.
Oh, he's so over-delivered. So over-delivered.
When you talk about ERA leaders in the NL, the only pitchers that had a better season than Shota, Chris Sale and Zach Wheeler. And both those teams are going to the postseason. Well, I don't know about Arizona, but you know, those are just two great pitchers. And to think that he'd be third, I thought that Shota could have a good year. I didn't think he would be this as phenomenal as he was. Ethan Roberts and Trey Wingenter each pitched an inning of scoreless relief. Cubs win 5-0. They take 3 out of 4 against the Nationals, which is what they were supposed to do. The trouble was they dropped 2 of 3 from the Pirates, 2 of 3 to the Rockies, and 2 of 3 to the A's. That's what killed you right there. That's what ended your season. Otherwise, you'd still be playing meaningful beast baseball in the last week of the season. But Dustin, Jameson Taillon was asked about Craig Counsell's comment about the talent gap between the Cubs and the Brewers. And again, I thought Taillon gave a pretty honest assessment. Let's hear what he had to say.
Especially a lot of fun.
How did you take Craig's comment from yesterday? You heard about, you know, everybody's got to do better from top to bottom. He didn't leave anybody out. What do you think?
Yeah, I saw it. I mean, he's right. We're pretty far back in the division. I mean, we've had a lot of things not go our way, but like you look at Milwaukee, they've had a lot of injuries. They traded Corbin Burns. Like, they've had a lot of things maybe not go their way, and they just find a way. I kind of liked the quote about not winning moments. Like, when we play the Brewers, it seems like they do win the big moments. I can just recall myself personally, like, I gave up a grand slam there, and it was just a big spot. I think I threw a two-strike pitch and gave up a grand slam, and it's like they seem to sometimes have the edge on those moments over us right now, and it's on us to flip the script. And I mean, I agree, it's a team effort, it's an organizational effort, but I'm happy Craig's on our side, because I have full faith in, you know, him in the front office and the coaches and us as players finding a way to identify that and get better, because we do have an excellent group of guys, and this organization's got a lot of very bright people. So I don't expect this year to be the norm going forward.
Now, he mentioned that grand slam he gave up. That was against Jackson Churio. I remember that one. But again, winning the winning moments, and the Brewers always seem to rise to the occasion. The Cubs, to me, Dustin, not so much.
No, not so much. Not so much. It was very honest. Very honest, very direct.
And this was another. Here's a little bit more, because he's got some good ones here.
90 wins should be the expectation, at the very least. Like, from your experience, just of what goes into having those kind of successful seasons, how far away do you feel like this team's organization is to being able to churn out that kind of success routinely?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been on a ton of 90-win teams. I was lucky enough to play with Aaron Judge, and that helps, and Garrett Cole and those type of guys. I do feel like we underperformed this year. Like, I do feel like we're better than what our record shows, and that doesn't matter, because your record's your record. But I do feel like this group's capable of a lot more, and whatever they diagnose and want to do to get better, I'm all ears and ready to see what they have in store. Yeah, I mean, I think, like, I played against those Cubs teams back in the day, 16, 17, 18, and it felt like when you're in the National League Central, like, we were kind of the little guys coming in here and they were playing bully ball against us a little bit, like, star power. It was scary to come to Wrigley and play. Like, you didn't want to catch them on a day where they're swinging it hot and stuff. And, you know, I think going forward, that should be our expectation, is, like, teams shouldn't want to come in here and play the Cubs. Wrigley shouldn't be a fun road trip. Chicago shouldn't be a fun road trip for other teams. Like, they should come in here and say, like, you know, we're going to get worked for 3 days, or they're going to be giving us a heck of an effort. So I think as players, that's something we should strive for. I know a lot of players on other teams love coming to Wrigley, and it's like, I don't want that. I don't want people to see Wrigley on their schedule and be like, shoot, I don't want a part of that. So, yeah, I mean, for the Chicago Cubs, we should strive to be a 90-win at least organization.
Bully ball is what he called it when he was on the Pirates, Jameson Taillon, and he would have to come in and you would have to face Bryant and Rizzo and Baez and Russell and Contreras and Dexter Fowler and all those guys. And you know, I like the fact that he said he doesn't want teams wanting to come here. You know, he wants teams to fear coming to Chicago. And he said they underperformed. And he said he felt that they were better than their record, or they performed, but they didn't, to me, Dustin, they didn't prove that at all, that they were better than their record. To me, they were exactly what we thought they were. And I thought they underperformed, to be honest with you, especially you can't take 2 months off of a season.
Yeah. No. Mm-mm.
Now, do the Cubs have the horses is the next question.
You said Judge, and in another sentence you said star power.
Good one by Bruce Levine here.
A lot of great players on your team, but does it take that in modern baseball right now? Do you have to have, you know, you have to have a superstar here and there?
I mean, it definitely helps. We do have a lot of good players, though, and there's a lot of ways to win. Like, there's a lot of ways to win games at this level. I mean, again, you look at a team like the Brewers, they have a lot of good players, but, like, they don't have an Aaron Judge hitting 60 homers or an Ohtani. They just find a way to win baseball games, whether that be matchups or guys performing in big moments. So that's, I just think there's a lot of ways. Star power always helps, being able to hit the 3-run homer. I know Craig's talked about that, but also like having the starting pitcher that can strike out a ton of guys, or, you know, being able to put the foot down and end a streak, that sort of thing. So star power helps, but I just think there's so many ways to win games, whether it's young guys helping, defense, base running. Like, it's not all about star power.
He's right. There's a lot of ways to win, and there's been times, remember, where the Cubs' defense to the beginning of the season wasn't good. The bullpen had its moments at the beginning and the end of the season. Runners with scoring position. But, you know, star power does help. It does help when you have a Juan Soto or an Aaron Judge or one of these guys that just can sit there. We're about to face the Phillies. You want to go against Bryce Harper, or God knows what Kyle Schwarber might do on any given day. But I'm just sitting here looking at this, and he kind of points out to the Brewers and how they're able to do it. Who, Dustin, right now, if I just told you, who's the scariest hitter on the Brewers, who would you say?
I mean, I have to look it up. Honestly, right, it just doesn't sit on the tip of your tongue, but I'd really have to think about it.
Right. If I asked you Yankees, you'd have no question. If I told you Padres, you'd have no questions. I mean, we'd go down some of these teams, but here's the thing, man, we're the Cubs, and we shouldn't have to be sitting here trying to play Moneyball like the Brewers. We shouldn't have to sit there. Well, you know, already, I'm looking at all the articles, you know, where are the big free agents going? Nobody's talking about the Cubs and Juan Soto. Nobody. Mm-hmm. Not a person. And that's what pisses me off. It's what pissed me off about Ohtani last year. You think Ohtani would have helped this team to have, 50 home runs, 50 stolen bases?
Right. Mm-hmm. He changes the complexity of your lineup.
It's just ridiculous that, again, we pay the highest game day experience, but when it comes to superstars, don't want to pay. No. You don't want to pay. You got lucky. You went bargain shopping, and you got lucky with Shota Imanaga. But you know what? Most times you're not going to get lucky. And most times when you get a guy like Shohei Ohtani, or you get Bryce Harper, or you get Aaron Judge, you get exactly what you're paying for, which are wins. That's my opinion.
Yeah. No doubt about it. You're right, as usual, Crowley. You are right about this. There is no doubt about it. You are listening to the Fly the W 670 podcast. It is episode 77 of season number 3. Cubs officially eliminated. Don't forget to listen, download, review, subscribe to the Fly the W podcast. Leave us one of those 5-star reviews. You can also email us at flythew670@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can watch us on the 670 The Score YouTube page. In this segment, Crawley talks to sometimes deputy sports editor and media columnist Jeff Agrist about the upcoming contract issues between Comcast and Marquee Sports Network that could leave Comcast subscribers in the dark.
Joining me now on the Fly the W podcast, I am happy to have on Jeff Agrist, the deputy sports editor at the Chicago Sun-Times, and he also does sports media columns for the Chicago Sun-Times. Jeff, it's been a rough day for Chicago sports so far, and unfortunately what we're talking about is not going to make things any better.
Yeah, rough start to the day. The Cub game is still on hold. The Sox game is starting, but more importantly, the Bears are doing what the Bears do best.
So, Jeff, you know, I remember in June, Crane Kenny came on the afternoon show on 670 The Score, and he was talking about concerns about the Marquee contract. Now, I remember when Marquee rolled out 2020, right before the pandemic, and I remember that Comcast was a big deal, and they put at Cubs Convention like a big sign up, call Comcast to make sure you get Marquee. And I'm going to myself, man, my whole life, you know, being a kid growing up on WGN and then going to Comcast Sportsnet, the thought of not having Cubs games was just bizarre. But now it seems like that original contract from 2020 is up, correct?
Well, he said himself that at the end of in September, which presumably is the end of the baseball season, so next week after the last game, Sunday against the Reds, that their carriage agreement with Comcast expires. So the timing is such that, you know, if you're just watching Marquee for the actual Cubs games themselves, this isn't a huge problem for you until regular season or preseason rolls around next year. But the look is such that, yeah, it's a concern because there's other programming that I know Cubs fans do like. You know, I enjoy Cubs Classics, and they show an old game with Harry Carey on it. I'll check it out. They do have other sports on the channel. You know, they do have the Red Stars games. They'll have college football games. They carry ISU. They have a deal with DePaul to carry some of their lower tiered sports below basketball. So there is other content, live games, and to watch on the channel. And if that's not going to be on the air for Comcast, at least, then for a lot of which is roughly half the households in the Chicago market with cable have Comcast, then that's a big miss.
Yeah, that's me. I have Comcast, and I'm sitting here freaking out, like, what am I going to do? What's going to happen? And what do you think is really just driving this? Because it's not just Comcast, you know, whether it's Hulu or YouTube or everything, the regional sports network model is just falling apart. And I don't know if we know what's going to come next.
Well, so the situation is this for Comcast and regional sports networks across the country. This is not anything personal between Comcast or Marquee. This is business. They have been going around to regional sports networks whose contracts are expiring, and the negotiation process is simply, we're moving you to a higher tier. You can take it or leave it, which is essentially what they're doing with all these networks. Masson out on the East Coast, where the Orioles and Nationals are, they got moved up to the ultimate tier, which is the highest cable programming tier on Comcast. Other RSNs have had this as well. And the issue will be with Marquee is, since they've been on the map, they've been on the basic tier, just like NBC Sports Chicago was all these years. Well, Comcast will attempt and eventually, I would imagine, succeed to get them to move to the higher tier, because that will be the only way they'll be able to stick around Comcast's channel guide, is to be on a higher tier. Now, you know, if you have that higher tier ultimate, which I do, because I like to have my cable channels in a full complement. You know, I don't want to be missing anything. So I pay for that ultimate tier. So, you know, if they do move up there and you have ultimate, you're not going to lose them. But if you are on basic, you would lose them essentially and have to pay that extra charge to get them on that higher tier.
And another option that they started to have was the idea of the direct streaming, right? Direct to DTC, right? Direct to consumer streaming. You can get the Marquee app, but is that available to everybody everywhere?
Yes.
Or is it only available to Chicagoland area? And that would that include all the programming?
If you pay the $20 a month, I think it is, for the Marquee sports app, you have direct-to-consumer access to the channel. So it's really an issue of meeting the customer where they are. If you have Comcast, that's where you are. So you would rather have it there than have to pay an additional fee to go buy the app and access the channel that way. But it is available. So, you know, if you want to, it's a matter of choice for the customer now, which is really what we're missing for many years, in the sense that, and this is what it comes down to, for decades, the non-sports viewer was subsidizing the sports viewer on cable. You know, the number thrown around was 10% of cable subscribers were sports fans. The other 90% weren't watching those channels, but they were paying for those channels. And all these years later, they're sick and tired of doing that. And then along comes streaming, which gives them the option to dump cable and get what they want elsewhere and have to pay for those sports channels. So now who's paying for those sports channels? The sports fan. So this is sort of a time of reckoning for us sports fans who have been subsidized by the non-sports fan all these years. And the choices now are, you can go to direct to consumer if it's available in your market and find what you're looking for. And in our market, Marquee is available DTC, so you don't have to miss it. But you can also be frustrated by having to pay another fee for another streaming service when you're paying for a streaming service that you would hope would have it to begin with.
Yeah, it's just bizarre. And I remember during spring training, they were talking about having some of the games like announced by the announcers, but like similar to like they did in 2020 when they weren't even actually in Mesa.
Right,
they were watching the game. And to me, I'm sitting here looking at this and you know, obviously the Cubs kind of missed out on the big contracts like the Dodgers and other teams got when they started their own networks. But it seems to me now it just that financially, you know, I don't know how well the health of the Marquee network is doing when you're having to make those type of cuts.
Well, that is true. They have been looking to cut costs. And one place they did that was in having exhibition games, most of them broadcast locally, not on site. So that was a cost-cutting measure. And it was disappointing, but given that it is exhibition baseball, it was understandable in that regard. They did have Boog and JD out there for the first weekend of the season. They may have had them back out again, but I don't recall exactly. But a vast majority of the games were called from the Marquee Studios. It's good business. Is it a bad look? Yeah, it's a bad look. But now, that said, they did hire a new general manager, Diane Penny, in place of Mike McCarthy, who stepped aside for personal reasons. Diane came in with a stellar record. She's been in this business for decades, came from the Northwest, NBC Sports Northwest, which the network in this time and age sadly had folded because the Portland Trailblazers went to a different network, Roots Sports Network, up there. So that's why that network went away. And NBC, of course, was no, as you're seeing in this market, NBC had no problem letting NBC Sports Chicago go. The same in the Northwest. They were fine letting NBC Sports Northwest go. But anyway, Diane Penny came here, and she would not have come here if the situation was not stable at Marquee. Is it fantastic? Probably not. But it's a stable situation. They have the Cubs, and I think that can hold a network for a long time. You know, having that sort of fan base, that attraction, that name brand as the leader of your network, that still provides a pretty solid foundation, even when the team isn't so competitive as they aren't right now.
Yeah, and I think that Marquee's done a really good job of starting to expand, like, you know, covering the Cubs convention and stuff like that to get fans interested in baseball, even when baseball's not happening. I think about some of the programming that I enjoy on there, you know, where the road to the minors and stuff like that, where they whip around and all of that. I think that they have some good ideas. It's just a matter of I'm hoping that the interest among the fans still kind of stays there, because I feel like, you know, you talked about some of the, you know, we just had a local high school football game covered on Friday night. There's a lot of stuff for a lot of people. And for me personally, like, my favorite out of the whole show is the documentaries. I feel like Cubs Productions does some of the best documentaries out there. And I just know people that kind of live across the country and they don't get that kind of stuff. And as far as if you live in Colorado, are you now able to kind of get everything that Marquee delivers?
Well, so if you're in Colorado and so Marquee's on DirecTV, I don't believe you would get the Marquee channel. And I have to remember that, because they did make a nationwide, you know what they did? They made a nationwide deal where you can get Marquee around the country, but I believe the games though are blacked out, because those you need to get through MLB.tv or extra innings.
Okay.
That was the deal. So you can watch the extra content, but you're not getting the live Cubs games. You'd get the rerun, you know, at 7 o'clock for a day game or midnight for a night game. But you're right about the other content. They have made efforts to supply more programming beyond the games. Now, you mentioned the documentaries, and some of those have been really good. They did the Cubs flicks most recently, which was just outstanding. But you haven't seen some in the last year or so. I would imagine that's also a financial casualty, because they need to focus on the game programming and the surrounding content, the pre and the post. So unfortunately, I would assume, having not seen a documentary, a new one, in a long time, you might see fewer of those in the future to sort of align their finances. But at the beginning, at the outset, they had made a concerted effort to get original programming on the channel, whereas NBC Sports Chicago, unfortunately, had not been able to do that because the financial support was not there, and they were strictly pregame, game, postgame, with a couple of flyby shows for a draft preview or a preseason or a preseason preview thrown in. So the effort has been there by Marquee. I just don't know if they'll be able to maintain it at the rate that they had begun to at the beginning.
Yeah, the last documentary I think I remember was the Buck O'Neill one. It's all Buck Jazz. O'Neill,
right. They did phenomenal. Freddie Jenkins, Billy Williams. Well, the first one I think was Harry Carey. And there's a lot of effort into it. What I do appreciate, though, is the effort to be local. You know, they have the deal with DePaul. they'll show Illinois State football, and I don't know what the ratings are for that, but it's an effort. They show the Red Stars, and they'll show the sky. They're showing the Chicago Hounds, the rugby team. So they are making an effort to be a local presence in the market for sports television, and that should be applauded.
Do you think now, once the deal expires in September, there's going to be more of a push from Crane Kenny and other members of the Cubs, like there was in 2020? Call your cable providers, let them know you want Marquee. Do you think that there's going to be some sort of PR push to try to keep Marquee on the basic tier Comcast channel?
Yeah, there always is a push. You saw it with DirecTV and Disney when they were going at it. Both sides sent out press releases. The only thing going against the Cubs right now is that there's no Cubs games. The Cubs network doesn't have the Cubs games in October, November, December to really have much leverage. So if it does go dark because they can't come into an agreement, you know, it might not be a couple of days. It might not be a couple of weeks, because the leverage on the Cubs side just wouldn't be there. But yes, if something were to happen, I would imagine, as you heard Crane say on the Score that day, you know, it's what keeps him up at night more than getting the guy in home from third with less than two outs. It's a big deal, because even though the regional sports network model is crumbling, there is still enough financial benefit from the market that remains, where the networks are getting those monthly subscriber fees, you know, into their coffers. It's not insignificant to the point where the model has just disappeared. It's still there, and they don't want to lose that. They don't want to lose a penny of that, because that's still a big driver of revenue.
Yeah, it's just I'm trying to figure out if there's any kind of future where blackouts don't exist. People, you know, I mean, that's every time we go to Cubs convention, we'll always have our friends from Iowa in there who are blocked out from six games. My mom and dad live in southern Wisconsin. They can't get Cubs, Brewers, White Sox. I mean, obviously, you know, when you think about the two teams with some of the biggest fan bases, it's the Cubs and the Braves, because everyone was able to see their game regardless of where they are. I don't know, you know, now that the technology is available, I mean, their MLB has to, in my opinion, start getting forward thinking that if they want to grow the game, there's no better way than allowing people to view the game.
Yeah. And Rob Manfred's aware of that. I know, I've heard him in interviews with national podcasts, with national sports media writers, and he has said a top priority are these blackouts. And they've got to redraw the map or just make the map disappear, because frankly, not being able to watch a team because of your location is outdated now. Yeah. That should be a thing of the past, where, you know, how many years in LA, in the LA market, were fans not allowed to watch the Dodgers, but me, myself in Chicago, didn't have to miss a Dodgers game. It doesn't make any sense. He also has said that fans are going to have to deal with and endure some pain before they meet success. Like, this is not just an overnight flip of the switch. This takes time. They have to line up all of these contracts. And you have some teams who may not be participating, because if you're the Cubs or the Red Sox, Yankees, Dodgers, why would you be willing to give up your financial situation to help out the 20 some other teams who would go along with a complete bundle of MLB teams that would provide you with access to games for everyone everywhere? Like, that would be the ultimate. I think at some point in the future, we're going to get to, whether it's baseball, basketball, or hockey, watch any game anywhere. Now, football, they're already all available on broadcast TV. Maybe that enters the equation in the three other sports. But at some point, given that what you just said, that the technology is there to watch anything, no matter where you are, I think we'll get there. I just think it'll take time to hammer out the details and, you know, who gets what money and how.
Well, Jeff, it's an interesting story to watch as the season ends, and hopefully, you know, maybe this need for a contract will spur the Cubs to sign a superstar, someone that would make it more enticing to watch the games after four straight seasons without a postseason.
Winning helps on many levels. We've got a new network coming to town. I'm sure well aware, the Chicago Sports Network, that will launch October 1st. And I'll say this, though, even though all three teams on that, the Cubs, Sox, and the Bulls, are not in the best of positions or have not been for a while now, live sports is still a draw. So there will still be an audience for it. But to have that draw of winning in your back pocket is certainly more enticing and gives you a smidge more leverage than it would be in the situation now where, well, why do I even care? Because all the teams stink. Winning can cover a lot of ills, even on the business side.
Well, Jeff, I appreciate you coming on the show. Can you tell our listeners where they can find your work and where they can follow you on the socials?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm at chicagosuntimes.com, chicago.suntimes.com, where I write every week at least once covering local and national sports media. And on Twitter or X, I'm at Jeff Agrest. On Threads, at Jeff Agrest. And on Instagram, at Jeff Agrest. And I never thought I'd be saying all those three things in one sentence, but I guess I am on all three at the same time.
There we go. Well, I appreciate you jumping on, and we'll talk to you again in the future.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
This is Season 3, Episode 77 of the Fly the W670 podcast. The 2024 Cubs season is officially over as far as playoff consideration. Leave Crowley and I a 5-star review. And don't forget to listen, download, and review. You can also check us out on all the different platforms of social media. And you can email us, flythew670@gmail.com. All right, Crowley, unfortunately, has come to this. When you look at the standings, there is an E next to our Cubs for eliminated.
Yeah, the Milwaukee Brewers have the Y next to them, which means that they've clinched. That's it. And again, 9 games ahead of the Cubs. Dustin, I got to ask you a question. Do you care about the remaining? Like, would it mean something? Because the Cubs are 1 game up on the Cardinals. They're 4 games up against the Reds with 3 to play against the Reds, who have given them a very hard time. But is it like a small victory to say, hey, at least we finished ahead of the Cardinals?
I mean, sure. It's better than we finished behind the Cardinals, right? I you know, if you want to take it that way. So, I mean, you're trying to have some positivity, yes.
Mm-hmm. All right.
How about you? What do you think of that?
Yeah, like I said, I'd rather finish in second. I'd rather, you know, be ahead of the Cardinals, but there's no doubt about that this was a disappointing season
disappointing for sure. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, second place, and you didn't make the playoffs for the 4th straight year. Congratulations. That means absolutely nada. But, you know, at least I can, if any Cardinal fans talk smack, at least I got something in my pocket. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Always nice to have that. That is, without a shadow of a doubt, to have that little nugget, if you will, in the old back pocket. All right. So a couple of roster moves and injury items to share with the audience.
Yep, Julian Merriweather season's over. He's now scheduled to undergo a right patellar tendon debridement. Merriweather was limited to 15 games this season due to a rib stress fracture, caused him to miss 3 months of the season, return to the IL, and now he's got this knee injury. Again, you take a look at this season, and Merriweather was supposed to be a key component, 7th or 8th inning guy, and he just was out just too much, and that hurt, you know?
Yeah.
Jordan Wicks, another guy. He was placed on the 15-day IL on Friday with a right oblique strain, ending his season. Injury plague season for Wicks as well. And then Hayden Wesniewski was activated from the IL after rehabbing a right forearm strain. The Cubs DFA'd Sean Armstrong to make room for Hayden, and he did pitch during the series. So welcome back.
Welcome back, Hayden Wesniewski, right? Okay. All right, up next, the Phillies, who have already clinched their spot, but they might have some more to say. We've got to take on the Phillies. That game's going to be at home, so that's a good thing. Let's do a little tail of the tape, shall we? Tail of the tape. Oh.
All right, we are going to Philly to play those games, unfortunately. When it comes to batting average, no surprise here, the Phillies are 4th in baseball with .263. They have the advantage over the Cubs, who are tied for 14th with .243 average. Slug, Phillies got the advantage there, .426, which is 6th in baseball compared to .396, 15th for the Cubs. Runners in scoring position, this is the big difference right here. The Phillies are 6th with an average of .270. With runners in scoring position, while the Cubs are almost 21 points lower with a 246 average, 24 points lower. That's tied for 20th in baseball. Starting pitching, it's really close. The Phillies have the edge. ERA, the Phillies are 8th with a 3.78 ERA, while the Cubs are 9th with a 3.79 ERA, so 0.01 difference there. Relievers, Cubs have the advantage, 3.81, which is 12th, compared to the Phillies, 3.88, which is 13th. And then defense, the Cubs are much better defensively. They are 9th in baseball at 30 defensive runs saved, while the Phillies are 17th in baseball with 17 defensive run saves. So, I mean, you can see that when it comes to pitching, Cubs are right there with the Phillies. Fielding, the Cubs are better. It all comes down to hitting with this.
Hitting, right. Yeah, and the slug is a huge gap, right? We're talking about gaps, as we've been talking about, that's a huge difference. All right, so game number one will be on Monday night, and it's a Justin Steele start. Now, I wonder if they're going to handle Steele the same way they did the last time out, Crowley.
Could be pitch count, limited innings. We'll see. This could be a good pitching matchup if they let him pitch. Justin Steele versus Aaron Nola. Steele's 5-5 with a 3.03 ERA in 23 games, started with 132 strikeouts in 130 and two-thirds innings. Been a frustrating season for Justin. Injuries have played a big part of that. Steele missed the first month of the season when he injured his left hamstring on opening night. Beginning of September, he was put back on the IL with left elbow tendonitis. His first start off that most recent IL stint was on September 18th versus the A's, and that's what you were talking about. 2 2/3 innings, gave up no runs, 2 hits and 3 walks with 1 strikeout. Steele has not faced the Phillies this season, but is 1-0 lifetime against the Phillies with a 0.82 ERA and 2 starts. Only 3 Phillies hitters have seen Justin, and no one has more than 4 at-bats against him. He's going to be going up against Aaron Nola, who's 12-8 with a 3.54 ERA in 31 games, started with 183 strikeouts and 188 in a third innings pitch. On September 7th, he gave up 4 runs in 4 2/3 innings against the Marlins. In his next start on September 13th, he gave up 6 runs in 4 1/3 innings against the Mets. But he had a nice bounce back start in his last outing against the Brewers on Wednesday, giving up only 1 run in 7 innings. The Cubs have not seen Nola this season, but Aaron is 6-2 lifetime against the Cubs with a 4.69 ERA. Dansby's 15-63 against Nola. Cody Bellinger 3-19 and Ian Happ 0-15. So not good numbers there. Nola throws a curveball, 4-seam fastball, a sinker, and a changeup.
Very good. That moves us to game number two. This will be Tuesday. These are 5:40 starts.
Yep, Javier Assad versus Taiwan Walker. Assad is 7-5 with a 3.34 ERA in 28 games started, with 121 strikeouts in 142 and 2/3 innings pitch. He's been Mr. Consistent this season, 6 innings, 3 runs. On September 7th versus the Yankees, he pitched 5 2/3 and gave up 1 run. On September 13th versus the Rockies, he gave up 4 runs in 6 innings. And in his last start against Washington on Thursday night, he pitched 5 innings and gave up 3 runs. Javier has not faced the Phillies this season, but is 1-0 lifetime against them in 2 games. One of those a start, and has an ERA of 0 in that small sample size. So, you know, you got to be careful with a lot of the different hitters here. So, he's going to be facing Taiwan Walker, who is 3-7 with a 6.91 ERA in 18 games. 15 games started with 57 strikeouts and 82 innings pitched. Been a rough season for Walker, who just got his 1,000th career strikeout. Walker missed the month of April with right shoulder soreness and the month of July with right index finger inflammation. Since coming back in August, he's only gone longer than 4 innings 1 time in his last 8 starts, with an ERA of 9.17 in August and 9.53 in September. He faced the Mets twice in his last 2 starts. On September 14th, he only went 3 scoreless innings against the Mets. In his last start on Thursday night against the Metropolitans, he gave up 8 runs in 3 1/3 innings. The Cubs have not faced Walker this season, but is 2-2 lifetime against the Cubs with a 2.73 ERA and 6 starts. Cody Bellinger is 5-21 against Walker. Swanson's 3-13. And Ian Happ is 1-12. Walker features a sinker, split finger, sweeper, and 4-seam fastball.
All right, so that's the second game. And then the third game, a little bit earlier, a 5:05. I don't know if that's for TV or something, but 5:05 and Jameson Taillon, who had those strong thoughts that we heard back in segment number one, is taking the ball.
Yeah, we've talked about his September. JMO is 11-8 with a 3.41 ERA in 27 games started, 123 strikeouts and 158 in a third innings. In September, though, JMO is 2-0 with a 1.08 ERA. On September 8th, he gave up 1 run in 6 innings against the Yankees. On September 14th, he gave up 2 runs in 6 innings against the Rockies. And on Friday, he's pitched 6 shutout innings against the Nationals. JMO pitched against the Phillies on the 4th of July at Wrigley and got the win, pitching 7 innings and giving up only 2 runs on 4 hits. Jameson is 2-4 lifetime against the Phillies in 8 starts with a 7.41 ERA. Kyle Schwarber's 5-19 against Taillon. Trey Turner, 4-for-18, Bryce Harper, 4-for-13, and Brandon Marsh, 3-for-12. They're going to be facing off against Christopher Sanchez, a 27-year-old lefty who's 11-9 with a 3.25 ERA in 30 starts with 149 strikeouts in 177 innings pitched. Sanchez has been pitching well lately. On September 9th, he pitched 6 shutout innings against the Rays. Against the Mets on September 15th, he gave up 1 run in 7 innings. And on September 20th, he gave up 2 runs in 5 innings pitch. The Cubs got their only win against the Phillies against Sanchez as they roughed him up for 7 runs in 4 innings. That was Sanchez's first ever start against the Cubs. No Cubs have more than 3 at-bats against Sanchez, who features a sinker, a changeup, and a slider.
Interesting. Interesting those games will be. All right, so now we have to talk about who's hot and who's not.
For the Cubbies, you got some guys that are hot right now. How about Nico Hoerner, 9 for his last 19, 474 average in his last week. We got Seiya Suzuki, 7 for 18 with a home run and 3 RBIs, hitting 389. And then Dansby is 9 for 26 with 2 home runs and 6 RBIs, hitting 346 for the week. So pretty darn good. As far as the not is concerned, you'd probably take a look at Isak Paredes, 3 for his last 14, and Michael Busch, 1 for his last 17 on the cold list.
Yeah, and it's funny, like from the last time we were here, these guys have like flipped spots. Kind of interesting. All right, so Kyle Schwarber, he's still in the hot category?
Yep. Right now, the hottest hitter for the Phillies, Trey Turner, 9 for his last 27 with a 333 average. You also got Bryson Stott, 5 for 16. And then Kyle Schwarber's 8 for his last 26 with a home run and 4 RBIs, 308 average. And then Nick Castellanos is 7 for his last 23. So some former Cubs here. As far as the not are concerned, how about Bryce Harper, 5 for his last 24? He does have a home run and 4 RBIs, but hitting 208 in the last week. And Johan Rojas, their center fielder, is 2 for his last 10. So I wouldn't worry too much about him.
No, I don't think so either. That's a great point by you. All right, here we go, Crowley. Prediction time.
Okay, I'm going to go with the Cubs taking 2 out of 3. I have them.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. 2 out of 3. Okay.
I have them losing the first game, Steele versus Nola. Juan Walker's been hit like a piñata lately. I'm looking for them to do something there. And then Jameson Taillon has been pitching really well, but so has Christopher Sanchez. But I think that the Cubs are going to take 2 out of 3. A little bit of a surprise here.
Yeah, well, I like them to win a game. They're not going to get swept. I like them to win that middle game that you talked about. Listen, you're going 2 out of 3. I'm going 1 out of 3. Just don't get swept. The Phillies are definitely still playing for something, have a chance to be the top record in the National League. Well, that's a wrap. Don't forget to listen, download, review, subscribe to the Fly the W podcast. Follow on all the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can email us, flythew670@gmail.com. And you can watch us by subscribing to the 670 The Score YouTube channel. All right, Crowley. So cheesesteaks every night while you're hunkering down to watch the Cubs.
Some cheesesteaks, some hoagies. We'll sit here and we'll root for the Northsiders. Hopefully they take 3 out of 3. Go Cubs!
It's all over.